is Iconic, with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host JM, and with me as always is Nick.
Hey.
Today we have a special bonus episode for you, one that's close to my heart. We have Ryan Danks of Reroll Productions back on the show. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
You may remember Ryan from our bonus episode 10, where we talked about his project Jadepunk. He actually has a brand new Kickstarter coming up that will launch Monday, February 16th, which is the same day that the show goes live, called Shadowcraft: The Glamour War. Ryan, why don't you tell us about your upcoming project?
All right, well, Shadowcraft is it's a Fate Core role-playing game of high-stakes espionage in a unique fantasy setting. The project is myself and Christopher Ruthenbeck, who is popular in the Fate communities. He's going to be doing all the mechanics with it. And then John Matthew DeFogie is helping us write the setting and a bunch of fiction related to it.
I am quite excited about this. Again, as I said, this is a setting close to my heart where it'll be one of my first opportunities to get out there as actually writing some role-playing supplements.
And a core book.
And a core book.
Now, you said it was a high-stakes espionage. That sounds like there's a lot packed into that. Do you want to unload that just a little bit and expand?
That's actually just the little byline we have for the Kickstarter, the tweet, essentially. But the game is basically, if you take Mission Impossible or James Bond, and you put them in a fantasy setting, what would that look like? That's what started Shadowcraft off. I was watching Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible. Like, what is it, like Mission Impossible 14? I don't know what number it is. but I was watching that, and I was like, if these guys were in fantasy world, like you had Assassin's Creed, it was Ethan Hawke and all that kind of stuff, what would that look like? And that was like a year and a half ago, and that's got me started on it. So that was where it started. And then one of the things I realized very early on is I did not want this to be Tolkien copy, because that's what all fantasy things are now. You got elves and hobbits or halflings because they own Hobbit. You got dwarves, and I didn't want that. This was 100% unique. It focuses on the Fae and the whole concept of how the Fae kidnap people. You know, that's like the horror stories, is they're going to come into the hills and kidnap you if you don't eat your porridge or whatever. Or at least that was the stories, I don't know, a couple of years ago. Yeah. So we're playing with that, where these are you're playing groups of people that were kidnapped by the Fae, and then magically altered so that they could be the proper slaves of the Fae, and eventually they, because of their magical alterations, they became somewhat powerful, and they overthrew the Fae, and now they rule the land. And a threat from the south is that the Fae used to keep at bay, they now have to contest with. And so open warfare hasn't worked. Both sides, they can't find no one's getting any purchase in the war. So there's a kind of a period of lowered arms. And right now, everyone is in this Cold War. And you play shadow agents for the core lineages of the Lost Ones, the group that got kidnapped initially. And you have to conduct espionage missions to kind of try to offset the power balance and fight a fantasy Cold War.
That sounds pretty fascinating. Is it tied into Jadepunk at all?
We're using some of the mechanics from Jadepunk, but it is not tied in setting-wise. It's 100% different.
Okay. How and why did you get in contact with John Matthew and have him join your team?
It was a bizarre turn of events, actually tied back to a Numenera game. We had a Numenera play-by-post that Nick and I... put together, and Nick actually ended up running. And one of the players in that group is involved in Jadepunk, correct?
Benjamin Feehan. He wrote the Vigilance Committee, the Jadepunk Tales line for us. And I love that guy. And I said, you know, anything that I'm gonna work on, he can work on. It was great. And so I asked him if he would be involved. Probably wisely, because he's involved with Grapplegun Publishing and stuff like that. He said, no, because the reason I asked him was Jadepunk Tales ended. He's about to wrap up the final one, and then he had nothing else for us to do. He was no longer working on the Jadepunk team after that point. So I was like, well, I'm doing this new thing. Now that you're kind of freed from that, do you want to do this? But he said, you know what? I got a guy. I know you'll love him. He'll do a good job. And he introduced me to JM.
Ben is actually a bigger fan of me than I am a fan of. So
I think Ben's a fan of everybody. He just loves everyone. He's a great guy.
He is. And so then Ryan and I started chatting, and ideas spun out from there, and that's how Shadowcraft, kind of in its current incarnation, has come about.
That's really cool. You know, you said you guys have been working on this for about a year. Is that right?
I started working on it while I was writing Jade Punk. I could not get this idea of an espionage fantasy game out of my head. So I was like supposed to be doing my Jade Punk word counts for the core Jade Punk Tales from Castle City book. And I'm supposed to be at the cafe writing that, but instead I'm writing what was originally called Eldritch Investigation Service. And that's, I was just writing that all the time. And then I got I could have put it out as kind of one of those fate worlds or worlds for fate. I had that much material done, and then I set it on the back burner, and I'm glad I did, because that one had elves and dwarves. And it wasn't until after I came back to it that I decided, no, this is basically Tolkien with spies. And then I didn't actually start working on it again, but it wasn't until I had to put it on the back burner again, because we started getting hardcore about the supplements for Jade Punk. And it wasn't until December, or late November to December, when I decided that I wanted this to be the next big thing. And then Ben put me in touch with JM, and then here we are.
That's great. Now, I heard you mention a couple times now that you wanted a point of this being not Tolkien-esque at all. Why is that?
It's just that it's been done. You know, it's like everything that comes out in fantasy. You got elves and you got dwarves. And also, I wanted to take liberties. And with what I had initially with the elves, I was taking so many liberties that calling them elves might give the wrong connotations. Mm-hmm. So I just decided, throw it all away. You know, dwarves, I was taking liberties with them. And I decided, you know, they're obviously inspired by the Stonekin that we have and the Sylvans. They're inspired by elves and dwarves, but they are very, very unique. I moved very far away from those concepts. Yeah, and they became, you know, with JM's help, we introduced the Fae. We didn't have that. I didn't have that initially. But I just wanted to move away. And I wanted to make this, because Tolkien based everything on kind of the old fairy tales. You know, he took them and he made elves awesome instead of these scary little creature dudes. You know, he kind of took those things anyway and made his own fantasy world. So I decided I wanted to go back and do that. And when we added the Fae, that made it just pop. And so the Fae are a much larger part of the setting than they were initially.
Well, and you've got the fact that Tolkien fantasy, he is the kind of the definitive creator of that genre, and then even Gygaxian fantasy, which is somewhat inspired and parallel to that. You have a ton of games and worlds that are built around that model, the Tolkien model and the Gygaxian model. Even 13th Age, which is, you know, the focus of Iconic, is built around that model. So to be able to kind of rewind fantasy to a point, you know, where Tolkien was picking up, again, kind of these myths and legends and then taking them off in a different direction was a lot of fun. Let's wrap around a little bit to the system. What is the system for Shadowcraft, and kind of what are you doing unique-wise?
Okay, well, it's a fake role-playing game, just like Jade Punk was. But just like Jade Punk, we're going to take a lot of liberties. We've got Christopher and I sat down, and we decided to use Jade Punk's dueling mechanic, which basically works off the Fae Core contest mechanic, where you roll against each other a few times to see who's going to win at something you're trying to get at. And we decided, you know, the conflicts are really long in Fate, and we didn't want to continue that. You know, we wanted the conflicts to be shorter because it's a spy mission. You know, the conflicts should be Jason Bourne fighting in the loft, you know, real quick, you know, combat scene, and then it's over. It shouldn't be the focus of the game. But it should be important enough that you're having fun with combat. So he and I bounced a bunch of ideas back and forth, and we came up with this really cool combat system that uses the contest mechanics of Jade Punk. And you can do it on a massive wide scale, you can do it small, but it sets it up where the flow of play, and this is pretty much consistent throughout the game, and we think it matches with a lot of conflicts you see in spy games or spy movies, where you've got the good guy has an intention, you know, the agent has an intention. They want to get into this party and convince this guy to, you know, I'm thinking of Ghost Protocol. But she was trying to get the guy to go in his room, and so they could steal something from him. And so, you know, you basically announce what your intention is, and then the villain's going to announce what their intention is, what they want to do, and then you roll to see who wins. So it's not like Fate Core is commonly roll to attack, and then the other person rolls to defend or resist that, and then that person gets a turn to roll. It's more like I'm going to hit him with my sword, and then this guy's like, well, I'm going to try to block that sword and hit him with my own. And so you roll to see who's going to hit who with your sword. And you can take consequences or essentially take damage to make sure that you get your hit in. So you could say, oh, and you're fighting for narrative control. So if you say you failed the roll, you could say, you know, I'm going to take some damage so that I can win the roll. And then you can you get control of the narration. I'm going to win. I'm going to hit him with my sword. And then that guy gets to kind of embellish how he dealt a little bit of damage to you. So it's this fight over who gets to control the narrative, who gets to say what happened, is really how it works. And that's unique in Fate. No other Fate game that I've ever come across, and I'm pretty familiar with Fate games, does it like that.
That's really cool. I like the fact that really draws out the role-playing aspect of the game and forcing you not to, like you were saying, not just make a roll and seeing whether or not you succeed or not, but actually in immersing yourself in this scenario and actually saying, this is what I'm trying to do. Now, as far as that intention goes and announcing that intention, how in-depth does that have to go? I mean, is it as simple as I want to hit him in the face, or do you have to be a bit more, elaborate a little bit more about that?
Well, just to play, all you would need to do is tell them, you know, basically enough to know which profession, specialty, skill. We're working on the names of what the traits are going to be. It's leaning towards specialty. But basically, you have to tell them, say enough that suggests what specialty you have to roll to succeed on your action. And the player would always go first. The player's doing, well, maybe not always. It would depend on the context and and how the scene's rolling. But one person would go first, and they would announce what they're doing. Just enough so that you know what you're rolling with, and you kind of have an idea of what the result would be, because that's important. And then the other person describes what their intent is, enough that you know what they're going to roll with and what their result could be. And then you roll to see who gets to, basically, who gets to win and narrate the result. The other person obviously lost, because unless you took damage to win. So it's kind of like succeed at cost. I failed, but I'm going to succeed at cost in order to control the narrative.
So it sounds like it's kind of maybe taking the concept of failing forward to the next level, where you can succeed regardless of how you roll, but the damage you're going to take may go up accordingly. Is that right?
Right, yes. And we're still, I've talked to Christopher about it. We were still bouncing back and forth of what the limit is, you know, because if I succeed at cost, then, well, what do you do? I mean, you could succeed at cost too, and so you're constantly upping this damage. And that could be fun. It could be a cool thing. At the moment, that is where me and Christopher are bouncing back and forth, where we're going to limit that. But
I'll go all the way to where both players knock themselves unconscious.
Right, I mean, you could. Eventually, you get somebody saying, I'm going to die for this. And that, I mean, this is spy games. I mean, that could be a thing. That could be cool.
Now, you were talking that you've kind of borrowed the Jadepunk dueling and contesting mechanics. Is there any other parts of Jadepunk that you've borrowed or adapted?
The profession system from Jadepunk, we're borrowing from that. We're adapting. Also, the way that Jadepunk uses scene fractals and faces, pretty much most of the GM section. But we're further simplifying it. Jadepunk is already really simple in that regard. We're further simplifying that, making it easier and easier.
And from a player side, what that means is that your characters are going to be highly competent right out of the gate. This is the Jason Bourne Mission Impossible level of action spy thriller, not...
Yeah, you're not... You're not starting as a farmer and have to level up to where you can actually do this stuff. You start as an agent.
So in that case, if you're already starting out at that professional level, what would leveling up further grant you?
Well,
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how far would you be able to scale into that if you're already at the peak of your game?
Right. So I wouldn't say peak, but you are up there. And so basically the way Jade Punk works, and really if you think about a character advancement, because that's kind of what we're talking about now, character advancement is mostly about character change. You know, players want to see mm-hmm. their characters change and grow subtly more powerful over time. And so the way that Fate Core just works kind of as it is that your characters change every single session. Every session, you basically get a level up or an ability to create change. You could create change aspects on your character, change your stunts, or you know, basically the equivalent of feats, change those things around. But then when you hit big milestones, like you succeeded a full mission or you succeeded a series of missions to hit a major milestone, at those points, you actually do grow more powerful. You get a little bit extra involved. But you always start at a very capable position. And then from there, you just get more capable. It's mostly about character change, though. And one of the ways we're showcasing this, because we want it to be more about, in Shadowcraft, it can be more about the one shot. You can play in a long campaign, and your character will advance. And over time, your character will be more powerful than somebody who's just starting out. That is true. And so you would be like this super elite agent. Like James Bond might be a character who's been through several missions, but, you know, a regular A00 maybe not. But one of the things we're reaching for with Shadowcraft is that con game or that one shot, where you can play, you can start a game, and you can play one mission through maybe a session, maybe two, it depends on how fast you are. And then if you want, you could change characters for the next one. But you're getting to change consistently throughout that mission, changing your aspects based on things that are happening to you and stuff, if it's a multi-sessional mission. And then by the end of that mission, because we also want to kind of mimic Mission Impossible. Say the three of us were playing a game and we were all players, you know, someone else was running for us, which would be super gracious. I never have that happen. But if that were happening, you know, what we would do is if we were players, maybe I'm the only one with a solid concept. And you guys are like, well, I want to play this super specialized character today. And then next time maybe I'll do something different, you know, and I'll play a different kind of character. So my character, since I really know what I want him to be, he could be almost that Ethan Hawke that's in control of the mission. You know, he's the big guy. And I could say, okay, when I get my mission briefing from the GM, he's going to give me assets, you know, the quartermaster is going to give me that James Bond gear, you know, artifacts, we call them, things like that. And then I could go build my team. And so we could actually role play, and hopefully we wouldn't spend too long on this because that would get boring. But basically I would say, well, I know a guy and I know a guy, and I would get you guys together and you're new characters and you're on my team for this mission. And then the next mission, we absolve the team, and then I could go to another mission, you guys play different characters. That could happen. The GM, if he wants to do that, he could kind of just role play that Ethan Hawke as an NPC. And Ethan Hawke was his name, right? I'm not butchering that.
It's Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt. I knew I had that wrong. Okay. Ethan Hawke's an actual actor, isn't it?
He is. I do the exact same thing. I was like, but Tom Cruise is playing Ethan Hawke. Wait a second.
I did. Yeah, okay. So replace everything I just said with Hunt, and there you go.
But that's another strength of the Shadowcraft themes is that you can have a group that is more troop style, where each character has one or two agents, and whoever is put in charge of the mission can then get the mission and have these multiple character, like a pool of personnel to choose from, who's the best group to take on this mission, allowing each character to have multiple choices if you don't want to just play one guy all the way through.
Right, and that's really cool for a con game, because you could have the GM says, okay, here's the mission operator, mission controller, or whatever it is they end up being called. He contacts you, and he's looking through his book, which one are you? And you look through the book, I'm going to be this guy. Okay, well, he contacts you, and you go to meet him. You know, so you can actually start the con game, you know, a convention game, role-playing as you're choosing your character. So it's like the minute you sit down, there's not this fiddly stuff. It's you could sit down and just start role-playing. He shows you the book, the kind of the dossier of the different characters, go ahead and pick yours real quick. All right, so he contacted you. Here's why you were involved. And he could explain it and describe it and discuss it. And you guys are getting immersed right from that very minute you sit down.
That'd be a neat way of setting up like an organized play or something like that, where you know you come to the table with maybe four or five different character types chosen for you, and you've got a crew leader who's trying to recruit, you know, I need a wheelman, I need a technology expert, I need someone who's good with explosives, you know, all this stuff, and then have the players decide, oh, this today I want to be, you know, fill this role, so I'm going to play this character. That sounds like it might be, that'd be a lot of fun.
It almost puts the focus in that type of game. You move beyond the character, but more to the cell, if that makes sense. The group of agents is the
and that's not the necessarily, that's not necessarily a default game. That's just one method to do it. You could totally play, if you only have one player, it's just one player and GM, be Jason Bourne or James Bond and just be the one super agent. You could do the kind of the more typical fantasy. You have your adventuring party, and this is just the kind of missions they do, and they're always a team. Right? There's a lot of different ways, but we wanted to make sure to get the kind of how spy movies are done in a fantasy world and be able to mimic all of the different movies.
Well, sounds like you guys have put a lot of work into it, and it sounds like it's going to be a great system. What would you say, question for both of you, since you're both working on it, what's your favorite part of this?
For me, in addition to the spy stuff, it's the fact that we've developed a world going back to kind of the fact that the Fae brought men to Arcadia and then manipulated them in this setting for specific roles. Everybody in the game is going to have what amounts to magic. There is no, I have to choose magic over this. So everyone, just by playing in Shadowcraft, is going to be a mage. And then from there, you further customize. So each of the lineages will have a type of expression that is focused specifically for them. So kind of the default race, the Glassborn, we call the mortal races the Lost Ones because they were taken from their world and they don't know how to get back. And so the Glassborn were the servants who maintained the cities. They were the Fae's companions, the ones who built and ran the infrastructure of Arcadia. And so because they were so tied with the Fae, their chosen expression is glamours. So they are illusionists, they are telepaths. You know, these are ways that they express their magic. And the Sylvan, as Ryan said, are these more wild and shiftery kind of expressions, whereas the Stonekin have drawn upon the essence of the mountains where they were at. So they're, you know, large and lots of endurance and strength and can craft relics. And we were able to take, because of the way Fate is designed, we were able to take the fiction that we wanted to write about and tie mechanics to it. So yes, everybody can do magic, but it's actually kind of dangerous. If you don't, you're taking what's within you and pushing it outside of you. It's expressing essence. And so the more you do it, if you do it nice and slow like a ritual, you're completely fine. But if you're trying to call on yourself basically in the moment, in the heat of an adventure, you risk fracturing your essence and having horrible things happen to your character, consequences that will get applied, and each lineage expresses these essence fractures in very different ways. So for me, I mean, that was a lot of it, but it all comes back to how magic is so innate and pervasive in the setting.
Cool. Well, what about you, Ryan?
Well, when you start something like this, it's hard to pick a favorite. Everything is awesome. One of my favorite things on every project is art. I love giving descriptions of art and then getting it back. And I think that comes from my roots of wanting to be a comic writer. You know, the idea that I wrote something and someone drew something about it. I really like the art. And we're doing a Guild Wars 2 style art for it. So it's nice and moody. And I really like the art part. As far as like as how things go, with the setting and things like that, what I really enjoy is the idea that I can play Gandalf and an Assassin's Creed character and Achilles from Troy, and they're all in one character. Everyone's a fighter, rogue, and mage, essentially. And so I like the con, because every single character type that I like blade singers and sword mages and those kind of characters, and they're never done very well mechanically. So I enjoy that I can do that, and it works with the. It's literally encouraged by the setting to be that kind of character. Those and the Sylvans. I love the Sylvans.
So you guys are you working, other than the core book, are you guys working on any other Shadowcraft projects?
Yes. We've got, as part of the Kickstarter, we're going to release a mission book, which is our missions are going to be easy to write. It's going to be basically a page, and that includes like villain write-up and like any kind of artifacts or something that the quartermaster is going to give the team. All of that's going to be included there.
Yeah,
so,
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, so you can do a whole mission on like a page. So we're going to do, with the Kickstarter, there's going to be the option to do a mission book. We haven't settled on a name for it yet. But that's going to be like a bunch of missions that you could play campaign style, because the one mission could, you know, has a pass fail. You know, if they fail to achieve their mission, what could, you know, you go to this mission. Or if they succeeded, you go to the other mission. And then there's side missions that you can mix in between the story missions. So you could play a campaign style, or you could sit down and just play that. We also have in mind to do an artifacts and expression book that kind of goes over the magic of the setting, but that's probably not going to be part of our Kickstarter. Unless we fund really high, we're not going to add any kind of extra books. And then we also have the Black Dossier, Beyond the Hedge, and that's going to be kind of a GM's, I guess you could call it a bestiary, if you will. It's just the bad guys and the threats and everything that you have to deal with. And then fiction. We're going to do a ton of fiction. Shadowcraft has actually created fiction first, because I took it from a setting I was writing with someone else. Then I made that EIS game document out of kind of what I was doing with them, and then modified it further. But it all started with fiction, and me and JM have looked at from the very beginning of how to implement fiction. We told Christopher when we got started on the project that fiction is first, and so your burden, I guess, is going to be taking the fiction we create and actually making the mechanics work for that, because we're not changing the fiction for the mechanic. And so, and I'm involved in all areas of it. But that's for the Kickstarter. We're going to do the mission book, and we're going to do a player's guide, because this is a spy setting. There's a lot of mystery involved in the main book. And in the GM section anyway, nowhere else. But if you're going to be like a group of players and you know that everyone's going to be players except for one GM, well, we have a tier where you can get the core book plus a couple of player's guides. And the player's guides cover character creation plus everything that the lineages of Arcadia would know about the setting. So everything that a player needs to know is involved in that, and nothing else that could potentially harm their enjoyment of the story.
So, Ryan, when does the Kickstarter actually launch?
God willing, Monday. We've got a lot that needs to happen to make it launch, but I've been working 12-hour days, and everything looks like it's coming through. So it should launch Monday, and it will, which is February 16th, and then it will close on March 15th, Sunday.
And what's the funding goal?
Anyone watching this, or anyone listening to this, knows already. We're putting together the budget right now. It looks like it's going to hover between 10,000 and 15,000.
Okay.
Because our art at this moment, and I'm still getting a few quotes from our artists, but at this moment, our art budget alone is over $7,000.
No wonder you're so excited about the art.
Yeah, we're throwing a ton of art. Actually, Jade Punk's art budget was, including cover art, was $2,000. So this is already almost four times the money, and we're making this as pretty as possible. And one of the stretch goals is going to be to even add more art, because we really want this to be a pretty book.
Well, what you said just a minute ago about it being very fiction first and then mechanics secondary, I can see why art would be so important to it, because, you know, art is so evocative, and a lot of times you give, you know, someone a picture and they can write an entire book off that picture versus the other way around. So I'm glad to see that you're putting that much effort into the art, because that's something that's important to me in when it comes to rule systems and such.
Right, and a lot of people have told me that recently. It was kind of odd, because I was going through, you know, getting art back from the artist, working with, we have a concept artist, an art director. Well, I'm kind of the art director, but we have a concept artist for the first time ever, and two of them, in fact. And so I'm sitting here, you know, one of them's local, so I'm sitting down and working with him. The other one, I believe he lives in Maine. And we're dealing with both of them, and I'm working with them back and forth. And I'm thinking about the art, and then all of a sudden, everyone on all of my social media is talking about how important art is. And, you know, like Benjamin, we talked about earlier, he said that if a book isn't pretty, he won't even pick it up. And that's kind of like me, too. I mean, even if you wrote the best game in the world, if it's not pretty, doesn't have pretty pictures to kind of evoke story in me, I don't care, because I can get mechanics out of a board game. Mm-hmm. I care about, in role-playing, about the story and the setting and the fiction. And art is a huge part of that. We're kind of like writing children's books, you know? We need the art to continue our engagement.
Shadows of Esterin, that's why I supported them originally, was because they were just some of the most beautiful books that I've ever seen. Art is a big draw.
Right, yeah, and we've got some great artists. And one, Nicole Cardiff, comes from Jade Punk. She did most of our work on Jade Punk. We've got Robert Crum. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's doing art for us. This is my first time working with him. He's given us one back already that's I shared on Google Plus, and I got a lot of positive feedback for that. And that's on the Kickstarter page. That'll be there. And then I'm looking at inviting back some other artists I've worked with in the past, maybe finding a few more, because already, just looking at the budget right now, we've got over 30 pieces, maybe 40, close to 40 pieces of art, and that's just the current budget. If that remains the case, then we might need some more artists just to fulfill that. So we're playing with, you know, I'm playing with getting more artists involved, but at the moment, Nicole, because she did such a good job on Jade Punk, and she is so professional, she's usually my lead artist. When I need something to go to, I go to her first. Or if she's too busy, then I'll go find other people. But art is a high focus on this. From day one, I knew that we were going to look at art as being a big deal. And another reason is that we want Reroll Productions to be considered, because Paizo, to me, the publisher of Pathfinder,
mm-hmm.
I could care less, honestly, about D&D anything. I haven't been a fan of that in 10 years. But I would play their games only because their art and their books are some of the prettiest I've ever seen.
They have such high production quality. I'm right there with you, except for their rule system.
Right, yeah, I don't like the rule system. But I would play it just so I could look at I have an excuse to look through their books. And I don't own one of their books. I would go buy them for that. Their quality is so nice. And with Jade Punk was our first ever book, and we got a lot of talk about how good our quality was, which was really something I enjoyed, because it was my first role-playing game, professional, you know, that I actually put out and made money on. And so I was like, you know, I think from that moment on, I said, you know, that's going to be a thing. Reroll is going to go to the absolute limit that we can do to make sure that all of our products get eventually to that Paizo level or even FFG. They've got some nice quality stuff too. Get to that level and then maintain it. And if anything, try to blow it out of the water. So we're doing things like we're adopting how Atomic Robo uses comic books, comic book pages, the Atomic Robo role-playing game, to teach and give examples of the stuff. We've got this two panel because of how our mechanics are. You kind of set up with your description of your intention, and then you roll to see what the result is, and so then you've got that kind of setup and then that resolution. And so we're doing kind of a two-panel comic book thing where no thought bubbles, because that kind of breaks the tone of Shadowcraft, but there's going to be like text boxes for who's talking. And it's going to be kind of one panel for the setup. You know, this person says they're doing this person says they're doing that. You can kind of see both characters getting ready for that thing. And then you see the resolution of whoever won, they're doing their thing. And we're going to have a bunch of those scattered throughout the book, and that's going to make it, I hope, really show that quality of not only are we doing this, we're considering the art just to make it pretty, but we're considering the art for helping tell the story of Shadowcraft and helping you to understand the rules. Like, the art is just an integral part of the book itself and not just a pretty element.
Yeah, that's a great way of doing it.
Another thing that we've got that'll be releasing with the Kickstarter to kind of help get people in the mindset of Shadowcraft, Ryan and I are going to be doing a series of flash fictions, which is going to be just the introductions of the chapters are going to tell a brief story in the Shadowcraft universe, and we're going to be releasing those over the course of the Kickstarter so that people will get a feel for the universe right off the bat. We're also going to release them as Podio fiction as well, where you're going to be able to download and hear somebody read them. I think it's going to be me.
You got that sexy voice.
I do have that. Yeah. I'm going to get a concept, or a complex, not a concept. I have a concept. I will be reading the fiction. You'll be able to download those off the Kickstarter page as well.
And then going forward, what we intend to do is serialized fiction. If anyone's seen the Reroll Productions Serial Tales, Iconic Adventures we have going on Patreon, it's going to be in that kind of a format, but not through, maybe through Serial Tales. We don't know. I haven't talked to Jake about it yet. But what we're planning on doing is releasing serialized fiction for Shadowcraft that is going to be free audio. The audio is going to be free download. Anyone can download and hear it. And then if you want to support us through it, you purchase the ebooks that we're going to create off of it. And once we're done with the story arc, we'll compile it all into one big ebook and sell that ebook. And so that's going to be how the fiction post Kickstarter is going to go. And so the way that we're introducing it through the Kickstarter is to try to kind of just introduce people to this method of how we're going to be disseminating fiction in the future. And then hopefully they'll jump on board with that too. If they really like the setting, that's all the fiction's going to be.
Well, one of the most fun things about Kickstarters are about the stretch goals. And I know you've mentioned a couple of them in passing. Do you want to talk a little bit about what stretch goals you have in mind?
So our first two stretch goals are going to be, our first stretch goal is going to be more missions for the mission book, where we don't know the number of missions we're going to have in it yet. Well, anyone listening to this knows now, but at the moment that we're recording this, we don't know. And so when we have, we're going to add more missions to that as one stretch goal. Then the very next stretch goal is going to be more art, because more art. After that, we're going to play with a few things. One of the things that Christopher mentioned that he wants to see done, and I'm fine with making this a stretch goal, is releasing the rule system part, not Shadowcraft setting, but the rules as Creative Commons, so anyone can use it to make their own game off of it.
Nice.
I already wanted to do that at some point, but like Jade Punk, I want to do that for Jade Punk's mechanics, but it's got to be feasible, you know, with as far as business is concerned. Like for Jade Punk, a lot of people hear about our rules and they come to Jade Punk for the rules, but then they stay for the setting. So if we let the rules just go out there, we're kind of defeating, we're giving away what half of our audience comes to us for. But with Shadowcraft, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's a more mainstream setting, and people are going to be more about the setting. And so I'm a little more comfortable releasing the rules of Shadowcraft. But it also has to be a how and everything. But if people pay for it in the Kickstarter, we'll do it right away.
Well, Ryan, thanks for coming on air and telling us about Shadowcraft. I'm looking forward to the Kickstarter, and we'll be sure to put a link to the Kickstarter in the show notes and encourage all of our listeners to go check them out.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I have a lot of fun on your guys' show.
Oh, well, thanks for coming back a second time. Repeat guest.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.